severely increased. Not only me, but all of the people have slided into poverty. Joblessness has harmed us all. Last year I was a construction worker, but today I can't provide some loaves of bread for my family as I am unemployed. We are unable to make ends meet. The prices of food items have already soared.
Advocates in the country express concern about Afghanistan's worsening situation, saying the West, especially the U.S., share a major role in world poor people suffering.
If we provide the percentage, the U.S. is 60-70% to blame for the ongoing crisis in Afghanistan, mainly due to their moves and mistakes. In addition, now the Ukraine war is affecting the Afghan economy, so who is prolonging the war in Ukraine? Again, the Western bloc, including the U.S. and the U.K. Prolonging the war might harm superpowers, but it definitely ruins the economy and lives of vulnerable people across the globe.
The UN Refugee Agency has also called for $3 billion in urgent aid to Afghanistan before winter to avert famine and death. Afghanistan is facing multiple humanitarian crises. Poverty and hunger, in particular, are taking their toll on millions of people in the country. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Pakistan has joined the rest of the Muslim world to condemn the Indian ruling party. Two senior officials of the Bharatiya Janata Party recently made derogatory remarks that disrespect the Holy Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. The Indian envoy in Islamabad was summoned by the Foreign Office to record a strong protest. In a statement, Pakistan says the remarks have not only deeply hurt the sentiments of the people of Pakistan, but billions of Muslims around the world.
People in Pakistan are outraged by the insulting remarks. They are demanding strong action against those Indian officials, as well as calling on the Muslim world to put up a united front against this religious bigotry.
After uproar in the Muslim world, the Indian ruling party suspended its two officials, but people feel that is not enough.
This is a test for the OIC. The OIC has issued a statement, but it is not enough. This OIC must take a stand and raise this issue with Mr. Modi.
We condemn this. Such sentiments against our Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, hurts the religious sentiments of Muslims.
Pakistan's leading religious clerics have also condemned the insulting remarks.
All religious schools of thoughts in Pakistan have unanimously condemned what happened in India. We will work together and evolve a joint strategy against this incident.
The controversy has strained India's relationship with the Muslim world. Experts believe Indian ties could further deteriorate with the Muslim world if its leadership does not extend a public apology. Kamran Yusuf, Islamabad.
Families of Palestinian prisoners and rights activists have held a sit-in protest inside the office of the International Committee of the Red Cross in Gaza. They protested Israel's inhumane treatment of some 5,000 political prisoners held in Israeli jails. Their solidarity action comes as some 450 administrative detainees have been refusing to show up for the military court hearings for more than 6 months. These detainees are held in Israeli jails without charge or trial for a long time. Their only recourse to call attention to their plight has been hunger strikes. Among them, Khalil Awaude has been refusing food for more than 3 months, and Raed Rayyan has adopted the same passive resistance approach since more than 2 months ago.
We are talking about the Palestinian administrative detainees who are boycotting the Israeli military court since the beginning of this year, to demanding to stop the administrative detention. And nowadays, two Palestinian detainees are ongoing on their hunger strike.
Palestinian prisoners are held in 24 Israeli prisons and detention centers, where rights groups say they are denied their basic human rights.
Palestinian prisoners are being held under inhumane conditions inside Israeli jails. Israel refuses to respect the international conventions regarding the treatment of prisoners. We will continue our solidarity and our resistance until all our prisoners are free.
Prisoners' advocacy groups also condemned Israel's inhumane treatment of Palestinian prisoners, especially those suffering from chronic medical conditions.
Medical negligence, which is targeting hundreds of Palestinian sick prisoners, these procedures, we always talk about it, and we demand the international community to interfere and to stop such policies, and also the invasions, the daily invasions to the sections and prisons of Palestinian detainees.
Securing the release of prisoners is a highly emotive issue for Palestinians who regard them as prisoners of war and as symbols of resistance against the Israeli occupation.
Rights groups are calling on the international community to hold the Israeli regime accountable for its grave violations against Palestinian prisoners. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
The moment of truth for the embattled British Prime Minister at the end of a day rife with speculation about his political survival.
Good evening. I can report as returning officer that 359 ballots were cast, no spoiled ballots, that the vote in favour of having confidence in Boris Johnson as leader was 211 votes. And the vote against was 148 votes.
It's a result that means Boris Johnson is now a weakened leader and with an uncertain future, although he himself doesn't think so.
Well, I think this is a very good result for politics and for the country. Just in,
it's
just I do. Just in this sense, I think it's a convincing result, a decisive result, and what it means is that as a government, we can move on and focus on the stuff that I think really matters.
But it's exactly this stuff that matters to people that forced members of his own Conservative Party to call for a no-confidence vote. Lockdown law-breaking parties held at government buildings at the height of the pandemic, when families were banned from visiting even dying relatives.
This vote was inevitable. We all knew it was coming. It was just a matter of getting the Jubilee out of the way. Why? Because the Conservative Party is really nervous about losing the next election. Let's not pretend this is about high principle. Boris Johnson was elected as an electoral asset. Now he's an electoral liability, and he's going to stay that way as far as I can see.
The sticky Partygate scandal played a major role in Conservative MPs challenging Johnson's position, but it was not the only reason.
It's about the end of party time in so many different areas. His green agenda is nothing to do with Conservative policy and is, in my view, directly responsible for the cost of living crisis. He's apparently failed to deliver on the Northern Ireland Protocol, which is essential to a unionist party, a party that doesn't want to see the breakup of the United Kingdom. And then there are small gaffes, times when he just doesn't look like he's taking the job seriously.
Things came to a boiling point over the weekend when the Prime Minister was booed at an event celebrating the Queen's 70-year rule. And prior to Monday's vote, allegations of intimidation and arm twisting by number 10 trying to get Conservative MPs to change their minds. And the last-ditch effort by Boris Johnson himself writing to MPs begging for a second chance.
So Boris Johnson managed to survive this vote on his premiership, but by a number that will continue to be an open wound for the members of his Conservative Party, which is why some experts say he won't be able to hold on to power for much longer. Saeed Purizep, London.
In the limelight.
In the United States, the Manhattan District Attorney is continuing to investigate former President Donald J. Trump, but knowledgeable people say charges are unlikely to occur in the foreseeable future, if ever. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalists Ben Protas, Jonah Bromwich, William Rashbaum, and Lana Nguyen. The piece is titled "Likelihood of Trump Indictment in Manhattan Fades as Grand Jury Wraps Up." When some two dozen New Yorkers filed into a Manhattan courthouse to finish out their grand jury service, the case against a man who would have been the world's most prominent criminal defendant was no longer before them. That man, Donald Trump, was facing potential criminal charges from the grand jury this year over his business practices. But in the weeks since the Manhattan District Attorney, Alvin Bragg, stopped presenting evidence to the jurors about Donald Trump, new signs have emerged that the former president will not be indicted in Manhattan in the foreseeable future, if at all. At least three of the witnesses, once central to the case, have either not heard from the district attorney's office in months or have not been asked to testify, according to people with knowledge of the matter. In recent weeks, a prosecutor at the Manhattan District Attorney's office, who played a key role in the investigation, has stopped focusing on a potential case against Donald Trump. Other people with knowledge of the inquiry have said, a move that followed the resignation earlier this year of two senior prosecutors leading the investigation. And the remaining prosecutors working on the Donald Trump investigation have abandoned the war room they used to prepare for their grand jury presentation early this year, the people said, leaving behind an expansive office suit and conference room on the 15th floor of the district attorney's office in Lower Manhattan. The grand jury's expiration at the end of the month does not preclude prosecutors from impaneling another jury. But the developments underscore the reduced possibility that Donald Trump will face charges under Alvin Bragg, who, along with several other prosecutors, had concerns about proving the case. Some people close to the inquiry believe that it will not result in an indictment for the former president unless a witness cooperates unexpectedly, a long shot in an investigation that has been running for more than 3 years. In recent weeks, Alvin Bragg's prosecutors have issued a few additional subpoenas that indicate they are continuing to investigate but have not found a new path to charging Donald Trump. The previous unreported subpoenas, people with knowledge of the matter have said, appear to focus on the same topic that has long been the subject of the investigation, whether Donald Trump falsely inflated the value of his assets in annual financial statements. The subpoena suggests that, rather than pursuing a new theory of the case, Alvin Bragg is looking at additional entities that received Mr. Trump's financial statements as he sought loans and pursued other business, and that the prosecutors are seeking potential victims of the former president. One of the subpoenas went to a major financial institution that may have received Donald Trump's financial statements. A second subpoena, sent to the Trump Organization, largely followed up on an earlier demand to the company for records related to the value of its properties. And a third subpoena went to the New York City agency that tracks municipal vendors, including Donald Trump, who has done business with the city for years, operating a golf course in the Bronx and an ice rink in Central Park. In an interview this month, Alvin Bragg said that his prosecutors were interviewing new witnesses and looking at additional evidence. He declined to provide any details, citing grand jury secrecy law, but said that the inquiry must be allowed to run its course. "It's a work in progress," Alvin Bragg said, adding later, We've got seasoned prosecutors working every day. It's not going to be on a timeline. But impaneling a new grand jury could create challenges for any potential case. Donald Trump's lawyers could argue, and a judge might agree, that prosecutors were inappropriately hunting for a more favorable group of jurors. It would also take time to prepare a new presentation of evidence and months to lay out a case to jurors. Alvin Bragg's office does not have unlimited time to charge Donald Trump. Witnesses could forget key information. Prosecutors would also face a deadline to file the charges within 5 years of any crimes being committed, though there are some exceptions that extend that deadline. And were Donald Trump to announce another presidential run, Alvin Bragg would be likely to face political pressure not to indict a leading contender for the White House. But even as the criminal investigation fades from public view, the New York Attorney General, Letitia James, appears poised to take action against Donald Trump as part of her inquiry into whether he falsely inflated the value of his assets in annual financial statements. The same conduct at the center of the criminal investigation. At a court hearing on Monday, 25th of April, a lawyer from her office said that the Attorney General, Letitia James, would probably take action against the former president in the near future. Because her investigation is civil, Letitia James can bring a lawsuit, but not criminal charges. At that hearing, a judge held Donald Trump in contempt of court for failing to fully comply with a subpoena for records from Letitia James. And on Friday, despite Donald Trump's lawyers having filed documents that they said brought him into compliance with the subpoena, the judge declined to withdraw the contempt order, which is costing Donald Trump $10,000 a day. Mr. Trump has long denied wrongdoing and accused Letitia James and Alvin Bragg, both of whom are black and Democrats, of being politically motivated racists. If he ultimately is sued or indicted, his lawyers would be likely to point towards the disclaimer that his financial statements were not audited by his accountants and that they were submitted to sophisticated financial institutions that conducted their own due diligence. Alvin Bragg's office is monitoring Letitia James's civil investigation for potential new leads, he has said. And Ms. James's office is participating in the district attorney's criminal investigation opened by Alvin Bragg's predecessor, Cyrus R. Vance Jr., more than 3 years ago. In December, Cyrus Vance directed the two senior prosecutors leading the criminal inquiry, Mark Pomerantz and Kerry Dunn, to present evidence to a grand jury with the goal of seeking an indictment of Donald Trump. But when Alvin Bragg took office this year, he and several of his aides raised concerns about the strength of the case, questioning whether they could prove that Donald Trump intended to break the law. Other prosecutors in the office had raised similar concerns, people with knowledge of the matter have said. In the final months of Cyrus Vance's tenure, three assistant district attorneys stopped working on the investigation, concerned about how rapidly it was proceeding and what they felt were gaps in the evidence against the former president. Alvin Bragg eventually decided to halt the grand jury presentation, prompting the departure of Kerry Dunn and of Mark Pomerantz, who stated in his resignation letter that he believed that Donald Trump was guilty of numerous felonies. Just weeks after their departure, Solomon Shinarok, one of the key prosecutors on the team, stopped investigating Donald Trump. Mr. Shinarok, who for years was the lead assistant district attorney in the investigation, pulled back in part because it appeared to be winding down, two of the people familiar with the inquiry have said. The Daily Beast first reported that Mr. Shinarok was no longer actively involved in the investigation. While Mr. Shinarok is not investigating Donald Trump, he's still working on a Trump-related case. In July, Manhattan prosecutors indicted the Trump Organization and its longtime chief financial officer, Alan Weisselberg, accusing him of a years-long tax evasion scheme. Mr. Shinarok is playing a central role in preparing for that trial, and given that role, is participating in meetings where the investigation into Donald Trump is discussed, a person with knowledge of the meetings have said. In the interview this month, Alvin Bragg said that no one had left the Trump team since Kerry Dunn and Mark Pomerantz. Asked this week to clarify his remarks, Alvin Bragg's spokeswoman stood by them, saying that there was one dedicated team working on the indicated tax case and the Trump investigation. The team is led by Susan Hoffinger, an experienced prosecutor from Alvin Bragg, appointed to lead the officer's investigations division. The spokeswoman, Danielle Filson, said in a statement that the team included lawyers who have worked on the case for years and skilled new prosecutors with decades of experience and fresh eyes. She declined to say how many prosecutors and other staff are assigned to the team investigating Donald Trump, but said it was actively probing unexplored avenues. In the early days of Alvin Bragg's tenure, the core members of the Trump team took over a 15th-floor conference room as they pushed ahead with the presentation of evidence about the former president to a grand jury. But since the resignations of Mark Pomerantz and Kerry Dunn, the team has abandoned that room. An indication, veterans of the office say that the case is not headed towards a grand jury anytime soon. The team members are now sitting in offices in the Major Economic Crimes Bureau.
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Defense of Iranian combatants.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
Change is hard, especially when paired with dismemberment. That's what the Raisi economic reforms are being called, economic surgery. As he, the Iranian president, scraps the subsidized rate of the dollar, the 4200 currency, that is, and as he scraps subsidies on some goods. But will subsidies actually be scrapped or just take a different form? Idea is they be replaced by cash handouts and the like, which have begun so that the most vulnerable can benefit. Because with subsidies on goods and services, the rich appear to benefit more than the poor. Question is, have the right goods been selected for desubsidizing and was the timing right? Welcome to Iran Today with me, Leila Faramarzi. The economic reforms at large are not a new thought, but previous administrations eschewed them for their possible painful fallouts. By mid-May 2022, however, 72 million of Iran's 85 million people got texts saying 3 to 4 million rials had been deposited to their bank accounts. That would have been $10 to $14 as a first cash handout. Our guest tells why a U-turn from indirect subsidies to direct. Mr. Rajai I found to be an interesting breed of cleric as he was explaining at Press TV Studios how he did a PhD in economics in the UK. He tends to agree with the government's economic reforms but hopes for greater transparency.
این روشی که ما داشتیم روشی بود که
In our previous way of dispensing subsidies, all people used to receive cash handouts because we kept the consumer prices low. In this way, rich people would receive more subsidies from the government, which was unfair. Taking those with the highest income and those with the lowest income, we see that rich people would receive more cash handouts for those products to which subsidies had been allocated. For example, for the imported rice, which is considered a cheap consumer product, families with the highest income would receive 1.65% more subsidy than those with the lowest income. In comparison to people with the lowest income, families with the highest income would also receive 1.78% and 2.33% more respectively for subsidized cooking oil and chicken. When we allocate subsidies to cheap products like lamb, those who consume this product 31 times more would receive 31 times more subsidy than those who don't.
In case you're looking for some healthy criticism, Mr. Hatami Yazdi, an economist, doesn't exactly see light at the end of the tunnel. He has suggestions for improvement, however, which he shared with us at his flat in a haven in leafy North Tehran. Why the U-turn from indirect subsidies to direct?
It is true that hidden subsidies or undeclared subsidies need to be substituted by open, frank, and possibly cash subsidies. But any change in economic structure of a country need to be studied properly. Scientific analysis has to be carried out. It's not enough to say that we are going to change the undeclared subsidies into cash subsidy. A good objective may be badly executed. We have experienced over the last 50 years that every time the government tried to set prices at below market price, setting any price at below market price involves some sort of subsidies which should not be given. Such subsidies will not help economic growth, will not help investment, and while you sell anything at government stated price that is lower than market price, you discourage investment, you discourage production.
President Raisi himself has explained why his administration cut government subsidies for a number of basic goods and medicine. The government has, yes, been allocating billions of dollars in subsidies for basic goods and needs, such as flour, cooking oil, chicken, eggs and sugar, for long. And even now, in effect, the 13th government is not actually cutting government subsidies for these goods, but is changing the piecemeal subsidy system into a smart one by, say, giving out monthly food vouchers for basic goods at subsidized rates. Apart from returning to the system of direct subsidies, which can reduce the possibility of smuggling, having eliminated currency 4200, the government appears determined to take or further the following measures to reform the economy. Those would be increasing and expanding taxation, controlling exchange rates, and boosting production by funneling liquidity into production. It's all easier said than done, however, listening to our economist. Let's begin with the matter of scrapping subsidized exchange rates to controlling free market rates by government decree. The present rate is around and over 30,000 tumans, or 300,000 rials to the dollar. Why did the exchange rate, 4,200 tumans to the dollar, have to be scrapped, or 42,000 rials to the dollar?
ببینید از 4200 چند اشکال داشت.
Our 42,000 rial currency rate had some problems. First, rich people would receive more subsidies. Second, it was easy for smugglers to traffic products that were manufactured at cheap prices. Third, when the government's preferential currency rate is exchanged 7 to 8 times higher in the free market, profiteers try to get more preferential currency than they need and sell their products at way higher prices. The preferential currency rate had also another problem. The low price of imported oilseeds like barley and wheat, which are used as food for both people and livestock, left no incentive for domestic producers to produce soybeans, corn or wheat as they were not profitable for them any longer.
Currency 4200, or the subsidized rate of the rial to the dollar, that's 42,000 rials to the dollar, was in theory meant for importers. This way they could buy foreign food and medicine and materials at a lower price to bring in. However, it, the subsidized rate that is, was cause for misuse and black market sales. It aided and abetted a multi-layered currency market with 3-4 rates to the dollar, and it was not easy to use practically. The last is because it took time for importers to receive their 42,000 rials or 4,200 tumans to the dollar. And so they in turn took their time in paying their foreign trade partners for goods. So the goods were just lying about in docks, causing further cargo fees. Our guest tells why currency 4,200 had to be scrapped. Mr. Qaderi is an MP on the Parliamentary Economic Committee. We got to connect with him on Skype.
The preferential 42,000 rial currency rate was a root cause of corruption in the country because everyone was trying to get that. When the difference between the government's preferential currency rate and open market currency rate is way too much, economic rent or corruption are expected to happen. The country's needs will also be exaggerated, and as a result, more preferential currency would be allocated for those needs. For example, we used to import oilseeds, livestock inputs, and pharmaceutical raw materials in huge quantities to the country. But after we remove the preferential currency rate, we'll see a significant reduction in those imports.
The government may not even get currency from the central bank and buy the 242,000 rial currency itself. Now, when the government gives individuals preferential 42,000 rial currency while buying it at 240,000 rial, how can it offset the difference? The government has no other option to offset the difference but to borrow from the central bank. If the government does so, the monetary base will increase, and because the money multiplier in our country is 8 for every rial the government borrows from the central bank, money creation is increased by 8 times over a period of time, and the 42,000 rial currency rate, which was meant to lower prices, will conversely increase prices through increasing the country's monetary base.
As for controlling free market exchange rates, economists are generally at a loss as to how that can even work, as markets are a living organism in which rates work themselves out.
Prices themselves act as an indicator. When you remove the 42,000 real currency and reach the products to real prices, you can use this removal for other purposes. Removing the 42,000 real currency rate can cause inflation. But if we still continue with our previous monetary policies and keep the 42,000 real currency rate, more and more inflation will happen in the country. People may be surprised first when they see the 42,000 real currency allocated to their consumer products has been removed, but this is just temporary. People may also relate the increased prices of other products to the removal of the 42,000 real currency, while this is not the case. The base salary of civil servants and non-civil servants has increased respectively by 60% and 57%. The price of utilities has also increased. These all give rise to an increase in the other consumer products as well, and this increase is not related to the 42,000 real currency rate removal.
Then there's further taxation for reforms, for justice. But will it bear justice? It's not easy to get it right with taxation in that, say, having a big old house doesn't mean handy cash to give away as tax. Or embezzlers and tax evaders being slippery eels are not easy to pin down. Raisi, as early as December 2021, did outline a budget funded by higher taxes on the wealthy and a modest rise in crude sales. At the time, the government expected tax receipts to rise by 62% due to a projected 8% GDP growth and higher taxes on imports and new levies on those who own expensive houses and cars, as pointed to by FT, the Financial Tribune.
There are people in the country who have high levels of earnings that are not registered anywhere. These are the people who work as merchants or middlemen. To help tackle this, we need to have clarifications in the accounts and transactions. If the government is the entity that manages the country and wants to remove poverty and develop economic plans, it needs to have comprehensive information about its people, and this is what is performed in developed countries. It's the irresponsibility of a government when it does not deal with the people's accounts and transactions.
The tax rates in Iran has many problems. Although, generally speaking, the amount of tax the government takes in relation to the general GDP or total income of the country is very low compared with Europe, compared with even Asian countries. We only receive about, the government receives about 7% of GDP in the form of tax. But the taxing structure in Iran involves a lot of corruption. Because the individual sitting in the Ministry of Finance who wants to tax a company, he's susceptible to receiving bribes in reducing the tax or creating problem for them by increasing unduly the tax that the taxpayer must pay.
More cash for production is the next step toward economic reform in an economy bearing the weight of a 50% inflation, caused mainly by minting unbacked money for loan renting and the likes. Production and a resistance economy when U.S. sanctions are looming and JCPOA revival talks are at a standstill has been a solution also on the former administration's agenda. Question is, will the Raisi administration get to deliver on funding actual businessmen who will invest their loans in industry rather than pocket it and run off, leaving the government behind with factory worker demonstrations to deal with?
The current administration, together with the parliament, passed a law on the facilitation of obtaining business licenses, which eliminates the bureaucracy obstacles in the way of the small to medium-sized manufacturing units and reduces the cost and time of obtaining permits to run a business. This helps the growth of production in Iran. On the other hand, we're working on the capital gains tax law in the parliament, which prevents the liquidity from going into non-productive and brokerage sections of the society. These are some of the measures by the current administration which helps the growth of production.
Time for a short break. We'll be back in no time.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
Currency 4200, or the subsidized rate of the dollar, was a major platform for corruption. But the list of items eligible for cheaper foreign exchange had already been gradually scaled down since 2018. Now, in the next few months, the government plans to introduce electronic coupons to only pay a subsidy once a transaction takes place. The system will be based on a mobile phone app. Through this, consumers will only pay a share of the price for basic food staples. Those are basically bread, chicken, eggs, cooking oil, and milk. The mobile phone app would rationalize consumption and hinder smuggling of subsidized goods from Iran to neighboring countries. Even reforms can entail new forms of misuse. Say, while subsidy reforms are designed to eliminate rent-seeking or rentierism, the hasty increase of food prices has generated massive grounds for rent and rentiering by importers and traders that had hoarded large quantities of basic foods before. Also, there are still blanket subsidies in place for some food categories, which also opens up space for rent seeking.
Inflation is the root cause of all the troubles that we've been suffering in this country for the last 50 years. Inflation is the root cause of any corruption that is economic corruption that is occurring in this country. Inflation is creating or widening the gap between the rich and poor. What the government is missing, what government economic policy is missing now, is the anti-inflationary policy. Even since the new subsidy policy is adopted, the price of dollar has been increased at least 10%. Do we have to increase the subsidy again by 10%? The subsidy that Ahmadinejad paid to the people was almost equal to $40 a month. The subsidy that this government is offering is less than one-third of that.
Now, it's not just currency rate setting, but price setting for food, goods, and commodities that the government has taken upon itself. And this continued price setting and interference in the market has generated a new scope for corruption. Moreover, the Raisi administration insists on exclusively controlling the importing of basic goods, as well as the apparent push to dominate issuing trade licenses. This foresees an unwarranted future of new economic rents in the system of governance.
To set the price for chicken or bread or energy by the government is not the correct move. Even if you give them the subsidy, when you're calculating the subsidy, you have to refer to the rate of exchange. Okay, when you change the rate of exchange, you're changing the subsidy again. I give you an example. When we set the price of petrol at 3,000 tuman, it was almost equal to $1. That wasn't a subsidized price. But when you set the exchange rate at 30,000, 10 times that price, you are subsidizing 10 times.
Critics have a problem with timing and or type of reforms. Reformist former Vice President Mohammad Reza Aref believes a more appropriate starting point would have been the lifting of energy subsidies. Or economics professor Morteza Afrah believes that reforms have been wrongly timed. Because, he says, in the absence of Iran being removed from the blacklist of FATF, that's the Paris-based Financial Action Task Force, the cost of implementing the reforms will rise, and this will put more pressure on ordinary people. Also, Parliamentary Speaker Ghalibaf has criticized the Raisi administration for hiking wheat prices before introducing electronic coupons, which he says have been mandated by the budget law. That's given the distress among people over increased food prices. Ghalibaf also claims that Iran's budget law for the current Iranian calendar year, which began on March the 21st, mandates that the government use smart coupons to offer staples at September 2021 rates. Raisi does have all that on his agenda, but he's begun with redistributing subsidies and following guidelines set by Parliament in the budget law. How importers went about the now-scrapped currency rate 4200 was that they would apply to the CBI, Central Bank of Iran, for foreign exchange allocations to, say, import wheat at lower prices. But what the government was doing by this intervention was that it was making foreign money cheaper, but not lowering the actual bread prices. The central bank partially did get to stabilize exchange rates by introducing NEMA. That's a centralized foreign exchange market for importers and exporters. Anyhow, whatever the exchange rate, a valid argument is that in diverting precious foreign exchange resources, the government, bearing inflation in mind, should be directing these resources towards importers of intermediate goods, goods on which made-in-Iran products depend. This could boost production, obviously. But to make up for exchange rate subsidies failing, the CBI finally decided to keep the exchange rate in place, but to eliminate the range of imports eligible for the rate. To top all measures, the Raisi administration began its economic surgery regardless of pain, protest or results of the Vienna sanction lifting talks. And it is to soften the blow of the reform that Raisi will be providing the targeted cash transfers for 2 months to the most vulnerable, having put electronic coupons on the menu as well.
Our current government has not limited its trades and economic ties to Western countries and is using the Eastern and neighboring countries' capacities while keeping its ties with the Western countries. It is also resisting to increased demands of some of the JCPOA parties.
According to an economist, Hashem Khani, only two support programs implemented in Iran in recent decades have been successful in reducing inequality after all. Those are direct cash subsidies and offering education and health services to disenfranchised areas. Hearing that economist, it should be a fairly smooth program because the government will have the money for the cash subsidies program. And so prices will not have to experience a further sudden hike as a result. Now, Iran's problems aren't isolated incidents. Question is, has or will the global threat to food security following Ukraine's invasion by Russia affect Iran's budget deficit, inflation and hiked food prices?
Of course, the international food price has increased, but not to the rate that we are talking about. The international price must have increased some. I'm not up to date, of course, I must confess, but I don't expect that the price of wheat in the world has doubled. No, it's a small percentage has increased.
Of course, it affects prices in Iran. It is a reality that because of the drought and also the war between Russia and Ukraine, given the fact that these two countries are major producers of oil seeds in the world, the prices of wheat and cereal have doubled compared to last year, from $250 for each ton to $500.
According to the Plan and Budget Organization, Iran annually spends 9 quadrillion rials on subsidizing food, medicine, and an array of services. Now, still imagining two separate exchange rates, that would be over $31.5 billion at the market rate, or $214 billion at the official rate.
We can allocate the open market rate to products like white meat and cooking oil and pay people the difference between the 42,000 real currency rate and the open market rate as direct cash handouts. There are some benefits to this policy. First, this policy will provide grounds for domestic producers to produce oil seeds, livestock inputs, and wheat. Second, it would prevent important raw materials for products like biscuits, spaghetti, white meat, and medicine to be exported to other countries. Third, the country's potential production capacities will be activated.
The government appears confident the economy has weathered its most difficult days. That's partly down to Iran's diversified economy and non-oil exports to regional countries.
That'll be it for today. Thanks from the whole team. But remember, the story is progressive. So to see how Iran is progressing with matters economic and otherwise, do tune in again at the same times next week and each week after. Bye for now.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, self-purification as agent of development. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of self-purification as the agent of self-development. When we look at the human body, we see that, of course, in the same way as the body is forced to endure a certain amount of hardship in order to fulfill its vital functions, like eating, like earning. So we go out, we work hard, and maybe we sacrifice the sleeping time. Maybe we are sacrificing the time that is being used for the rest. Maybe someone is sick or ill, or maybe he has a headache. And even with all those things, he goes to the work. Why? Because he knows that he needs to earn. He needs to bring some money. He needs to have some sustenance. And in order to have that sustenance, even if he has a pain, he goes to the work, he sacrifices for it, and he has the hardship he faces the hardship. On the other hand, there are some professions which are really having a lot of hardship in it. For example, when we see people working on the building a structure, manufacturing a building, or maybe manufacturing other things. There are many other things. There are many other jobs that requires hardship. So we see that the body is forced by the man, by humans, to endure a certain amount of hardship in order to fulfill its vital functions. And even we can see, like, for example, the sportsmen, the bodybuilders, they are also forcing their body in order to have this hardship and to bear this hardship in order to fulfill the function that it has. Therefore, we see this over there, that this is how a person reacts when we look apparently at a person as a human being. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of self-purification as the agent of development. We said that we see that when a body is forced to endure a certain amount of hardship in order to fulfill its vital functions and in order to provide the sustenance that it needs in order to have this world, or we need to spend a good life in this world, we put some hardship on ourselves. Same is the case with the spirit and the soul. And the spirit also must put up with pain and toil in the course of moral developments. If we want to have the moral developments, if we want to have spiritual developments, if we want to have self-perfection, it is necessary to put the spirit in the pain and the hardships in order to reach all these perfections or the developments that we are looking forward. All the various concepts and principles in the field of character building revolve around the axis of the soul or the spirit. It is spirit which is capable of reform and discipline. It is spirit which is capable of attaining sublimity and acquiring higher human qualities and excellences, loving as it does spiritual perfection. And finally, it is spirit which generates a series of ethical laws for the human being that the animal neither possesses nor requires. Therefore, it is necessary to have this hardship, the hardship of bearing waking up on the time for the morning prayer, for example, the hardship of spending some money for the needy people, giving away some money as a charity. So all these things, we think these are the hardships, but these are the things that takes us towards the perfection, that helps us to gain the self-perfection. And the self-perfection is in giving away and in helping people and in building the good society with the good ethics, inshallah. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/EN. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.